And any ideas what your future careers hold for you? Is it a case of retirement beckoning, or carrying on until your services are no longer required by the BBC?
Well, I think all of the above, really. I mean, I'm very happy continuing what I'm doing. The BBC still seem to have their trust in me, so, you know, but I don't take that for granted, and I shouldn't be hanging on to the job if younger, more talented people can do it. Equally, I don't see myself stopping broadcasting, simply because broadcasting is a little bit about sharing your life, and you know, by Jove, I've had some now, you know.
Yes.
There's quite a bit to share. So yes. I don't fear the microphone. I enjoy it. And I kind of probably think that if I stop being the editor, because there are stresses and strains of that, I think I would still hope to broadcast somewhere if someone would have me. But, you know, I've got no great plan. I don't want to retire. I can't quite afford to. So if the BBC will still have me, I'll still be here. But, you know, I don't take that for granted. Something could happen. Who knows?
And I know also, David, you play quite an important role within the BBC. It's not just here in Norfolk. You're also a well-respected managing editor in other fields in the BBC, and you often get called on to help out in other parts of the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think, yes, I can. I mean, I do run various courses for the BBC, which is largely down to the fact I enjoy doing it. And secondly, I think the greatest thing we can do now, if we've been in it a long time, is pass on the love of it, or the skill of it, or the, you know, I still get a buzz out of this, so come on, everyone, here's what the buzz is about. So I do go and coach presenters and help other presenters be better presenters, which is usually I think I can do it with a degree of empathy, because I still do it. So I kind of go, well, I know what that feels like. I'm not doing it from a textbook. I know that if you ask for people to ring in and they don't ring in, I know how awful that feels. Or if you make a mistake, I know how that feels. But it's not the mistake, it's how you get out of it. So I tend to travel the country quite a bit and visit. I mean, you know, early in the new year, I'm off to Manchester to run a course with some young managers who, you know, this isn't about broadcasting, but it's about managing broadcasters. And I think that's a very delicate thing to do. Managing talent, temperamental talent, can be quite difficult. So I do a lot of that, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And again, you know, what might I do if I stopped doing this? I'd love to tutor it in some way, shape or form. I love sitting in front of a class of, I don't know, broadcasting students or novices and helping them understand the medium.
Yeah, and that medium is tremendous, because it's so plentiful nowadays, isn't it? You know, we've got so much of a choice of online and digital radios and FM, and there's so many ways in which people can interact and how they can listen into broadcasting nowadays.
Well, that's very true, and that in some ways is possibly part of the worry for broadcasting, is that if you don't want to listen to a programme when it's going out. I mean, there's a live moment when you're all connected on the radio or television. Classic moment, Strictly Come Dancing. The nation connects through the television at one live moment. Everything else you can time shift. But the live moment collective is a dying thing, because there is so much pre-recorded, there's so much on-demand watching and listening. So I worry that changes the landscape, and the fact that you say, how's broadcasting changed? I remember in 1981, the most important thing you could read out on the radio was the weather forecast, the Watsons, the chemist rotor, which chemists are open, and, you know, various things like that, bits of local information. Most people get most of that now off the internet.
Yes, absolutely.
So
yes.
What's the point of us? Is my question. It's a rhetorical question, because the point of us, hopefully, is some companionship, some kind of collective moment in Norfolk. Mm. But it is true to say that the source of information that people, the sources of information, local information for people, are now multifarious, to use a disc jockey phrase. They can get it from anywhere, so why get it from us? So what's the reason for listening to us?
Yes.
So I only say that not in any desperate, oh my God, it's all falling apart, but just because the whole nature of what people consume is changing hugely.
And lastly, David, any idea with your crystal ball what's round the corner for broadcasting in the future?
Well, the many BBC seminars I've sat in about this, they tend to believe that we are content producers, so we produce local content, and it almost doesn't matter what platform it's consumed on. So as long as we put it out there, the public will probably think the bit of the BBC that is where they live is important. Now, I can't guarantee that everyone will think that forevermore, because why would you pay what is seen by some people to be a tax, a licence fee? I mean, each household pays less, I think, per week than a newspaper costs per day or something. I mean, I've seen the statistics.
Yes,
it is phenomenally good value. But in the end, you have to pay it. And here's the real difficulty, isn't it? You could go right now and buy a radio on Norwich Market for £10. You could, I don't know, the cheap radio, £10.
Yeah.
You could switch it on and listen to us for nothing. Right? You don't have to have paid a licence fee to have that radio. You could listen to the commentary of Norwich City Football Club, which we pay a lot of money to the club to actually do for the right to be there. And I pay the commentator and summariser to go there. BBC does, your licence fee does.
Yes.
But you could buy a radio and hear that for no payment at all. Which is an interesting business model, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, yes. With people listening to radio on the internet, so they haven't got a television and paid for a licence fee, who's paying for us? And is it important we're still paid for? I don't know. That's for some other people to debate. I think it is. I mean, I'm biased. But here's the real problem. You know, commercial radio is paid for by advertising. Sky Television is paid for by subscription. BBC is paid for by a licence fee.
Yes.
For which we have to ensure there's still an appetite in the country to pay. And I think politicians in the future, consumers in the future, will be deciding that long after I'm gone. I hope it continues, because they would not be, perhaps, commentary of Norwich City Football Club. The commercial radio boys don't do it.
No.
So they can't afford it. It costs a lot of money to do, a lot of money, for us just to turn up there.
Wow.
So you've got to ask yourself, in the end, will anyone do that? What's the basis of a licence fee? So my question, I turn your question around to another question. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the future of this type of broadcasting? I hope it continues. The public's appetite to pay a licence fee, which they're almost forced to pay, is debatable, but there are ways around it and people are finding it. So how long will we continue? I don't know.
Yeah. And it must cost a phenomenal amount to even just run local radio, let alone the BBC across the whole spectrum of the services.
Well, I'm not sitting here with the figures in front of me, but yes, we are speech radio, so that it costs a lot more than commercial radio, but the licence fee allows that to happen. So probably when we won an award this year for covering the floods in December 13, and we won a national, the biggest award you can win for covering them. Other people were covering them, but we covered them in a way that people thought, and that our peers thought, deserved a big award. Would that continue? It's very expensive to do speech radio. We had reporters out. Commercial radio don't have enough bodies on the ground.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think in the end, the licence fee pays for a certain sort of local radio that the BBC does. If there isn't a licence fee, or you can only have BBC Radio Norfolk if you pay a subscription, which is one of the theories, you know, just pay for what you want. How many people could you afford to do it? I don't know the answer. But we are on the edge of a precipice, I think, about how broadcasting will be done in future. And that's largely being driven by the technology. It's largely the energy behind the change in technology that's deciding that. And I'm one of those people that pays three times the licence fee to Sky to have Sky. And they show me adverts. But that's a choice.
Yeah.
That's a choice. So it's a real interesting debate. And I tell any media student I talk to, you've got to have this debate in the future with the politicians, not me. I'll be. It's done me a career. Thank you very much. Yep. But really, in the future, that's going to be a question mark. I think hangs over.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you for your 40 years of broadcasting, both with hospital radio and for all the contributions you've made on air with Radio Norfolk programmes since the early 1980s, and we look forward to hearing more of your Sunday programmes and. And good luck with all your editing of the output of Radio Norfolk, David.
Thank you very much. And I send fraternal radio greetings to all of your listeners.
Thank you.
And I hope they keep listening to us too.
Lovely. Thank you, David.